You can listen from your seats too, that's fine. So I have a story today about a thief. A thief who had stolen for so long and cheated and lied that his face had become all twisted, all contorted. And he couldn't go anywhere without being recognized. It was getting hard to be a thief. Meanwhile, there was a princess who was very beautiful and very wise, and she had decided that her husband should be handsome, of course, but he should also be good and kind and honest and generous. And she'd been interviewing for quite a time. Finally, her father, the emperor, was growing impatient. He wanted grandchildren. So he decided to have a grand feast and invite all the men in the entire kingdom. Posters were put up. And who do you think saw one of the posters?
The thief.
The thief. Now, he knew the princess would never want to marry him, but he wanted to go to the palace. There was a mask maker. That's what he would do. So he went to the mask maker and had a mask made of an honest man and a handsome man. And that mask maker was very skilled. So when the thief returned, it was amazing, this face that he could now wear. He went back home and he got on his finest robe, and he thought about all the porcelain and jade and silver that might be in that palace. And he put on his mask and he went to the party, and he was busy trying to decide what, you know, it would only be one object he needed to steal, really, and he'd be set for life. Which one? Meanwhile, in another chamber, there was the princess interviewing one man and then another. Some were good, but not handsome. Some were generous, but not gentle. Some were handsome, but not honest. She wasn't finding anybody she was interested in. But then through the doorway, she caught sight of a man who was very handsome. And he looked very honest and kind and gentle. She beckoned him over. "Me?" said the thief. No, couldn't be me. Couldn't be me. "You," said the princess. "You're the one I've been waiting for all this time." Oh, no, said the thief. "You haven't been waiting for me." She was insistent, though. And so he bargained and said, "Well, 1 year. 1 year. Let's be engaged 1 year, just to be sure we really want to get married." And off he went. He went home. It wasn't until he got there that he realized he'd forgotten to steal anything. And then he got worried. What if it was all a setup? What if the king's men were following him? What if they'd been looking for him all along? And so the next day, he didn't dare go outside without his mask. And, well, he didn't dare do anything that wasn't honest and gentle and kind, because that's what the mask showed. And he needed to look like the person wearing the mask. So he started to give alms to the poor and help a small child who was crying and help an elder lift a heavy box. A year went by. It got easier with each day. And that year went by, and the thief was a new man on the inside. And he felt he could only tell the truth now to the princess. So he went to the palace and he confessed everything about how he was a thief and that he had spent so many years being dishonest and unkind that his face was contorted. The princess said, "And now you're so honest and good and kind. Will you just let me see underneath the mask?" And he reached up. It was hard to get the mask off. "You've lied to me," said the princess. Your face is the same with or without the mask. She showed him a mirror. Well, not only had he been transformed on the inside, he'd been transformed on the outside too. They agreed to get married and had just the kind of party that you or I would have if we ever found that something that seemed completely impossible was in fact possible.
As we enter our time of reflection and meditation, I am very mindful as we gather this morning that yesterday was Yom Kippur, one of the holiest days in the Jewish calendar year. Hence our first hymn this morning coming from that tradition and part of our meditation this morning as well. I invite you to open in the rear of your hymnal to reading number 637, 637, which you will find is a litany of atonement written by a colleague of ours of Jewish heritage. And I will read the plain text and invite you to join me in the italicized text, which is the litany. And then after we have shared this litany together, we will take some time of silent reflection. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference.
We ourselves and each other.
For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible.
We
For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again from above.
For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again from above.
For losing sight of our unity. For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness. Let us take some moments of silence together so that we might indeed forgive ourselves, an important part of the equation. Forgive others whom we have felt have wronged us or who have let us down in some way. And then to focus on the last part of that equation of forgiveness, which is to begin again in love. For all that is on our hearts this morning, for all the candles lit, for hope and lives remembered, for all that is our life, and for the chance each and every day to begin again in love, we lift our hearts in prayer. Blessed be. Speaking of beginning again in love and atonement, some of us will be gathered on the steps of the Parliament on Wednesday morning at 11:30 to garner support for ending child poverty here in British Columbia. I was saddened to learn recently, as was pointed out to me by our SRC friends, that BC has the highest rate of child poverty in all of Canada, a whopping 18.6%, or 1 in 5 children live in poverty in our province. That's 18% too many, if you ask me. And so on Wednesday morning, some of us will be urging our government to begin again in love and to right relationship with those in need in our community. And that seems to be a good way to begin talking about possibility as well. I begin this morning's reflection with you, this morning's message, with two brief poems as our readings for the morning. The first is from Emily Dickinson, and it is a poem entitled, I Dwell in Possibility. I dwell in possibility, a fairer house than prose, more numerous of windows, superior for doors, of chambers as the cedars, impregnable of eye, and for an everlasting roof, the grambles of the sky. Of visitors, the fairest, for occupation, this. The spreading wide, my narrow hands to gather paradise. Second poem is untitled by author Juan Ramon Jimenez. My boat struck something deep. Nothing happened. Sound, silence, waves. Nothing happened? Or perhaps everything happened, and I'm sitting in the middle of my new life. How can we make a practice of possibility? How would that look, and what would it mean for our lives to, as my sermon title says this morning, embrace what might be? Having a sense of possibility as we approach the situations and the people in our lives is, it seems to me, not about particular things that we will do or we will say, but rather a stance that we will take. Often, I've noticed, we feel that we know what will happen long before it does. We know what to expect from the usual characters in our lives. It's as if we are running in the midst of a theater production that we have been the director for. We know when we walk into the room exactly what response we will get. And by doing so, we have long since closed many doors, predetermined the placement of our no, and feel certain that some upcoming moments in life are full of foregone conclusions. So my question for us this morning is, what would it be like to reopen some of those closed doors, and to remain open to surprising and unexpected outcomes? Would it be risky? Yes, sure thing. Would it be more vulnerable, perhaps? Yeah, probably that too, and that's next month's theme, vulnerability, so I'm not going to go too much into that today. But also being more open to possibility as our stance toward life risks more interesting and even sometimes more exciting outcomes as well. It seems to me that having a stance of possibility toward life is like saying, I prefer openness to new and different and emerging and becoming. I believe in change and healing and redemption and see them as preferable to viewing things as set and immovable and certain. Embracing possibility means both being open to amazement and the beauty of the unexpected, all the while knowing that you are also open to severe disappointment. Both things are simultaneously true when you take a stance of possibility. Things could possibly be wonderful, but things could also possibly go horribly awry. I find it hard in many situations in my life to hold open to what is possible, but that is especially true for me in my family roles. Can I get an amen on that? Right? Amen, Sister Shauna. Thanksgiving's next weekend, isn't it? Right? So you enter that situation that you have been in time and time again. You pull up your seat at that table, and suddenly the same old is coming right out of your mouth. And you're expecting every single person around that table to behave just as they did last year, to have no new stories, no new insights, no new wisdom, no new nothing. You have written their script and yours, and you expect it to play out the same way. So what would happen if something completely different happened at the table this year? If somebody pulled up the table and said, you know, I've decided I'm tired of being mad at you. What would you do with that? How open are you to that possibility? Can I stay open enough not to assume that those people in my life that I have a well-worn path of relationship with won't surprise me this year or next week or tomorrow? Of course, the possibility and the probability of fate or destiny or simple random chance is that many of the possible outcomes that will come your way in life will be unwelcome. Those are the possibilities it feels hardest to stay open to. I remember I was sitting in my pastoral care class with Rosemary Canici. She was a Catholic nun who had remarkably come to teach at a Unitarian Universalist seminary. And she was sitting there with us one day. We were sitting in our little comfy classroom in Berkeley, California. And Rosemary said to us, now I know that most of the things I teach you in this pastoral care class, you will not remember. I'm not naive. I've been around the block a few times. I know how you seminary students are. You come in, your eyes wide and happy, and you think, pastoral care, I'm going to fix everybody. I'm going to work it all out. I'm going to be good at this. She said, I want you to remember one thing if you remember nothing else of what I tell you. When you are meeting with someone in your congregation or in a hospital or in whatever circumstance you find yourself in, there is one thing that you can never say to them. We all leaned in, eager for this nugget of wisdom. What is the one thing you can never say? She said, never say, it will get better. Never, ever say, it will all be okay. And then she looked at us and she said, because how do you know? It could get worse before it gets better. It might never get better. And if you hold out this false hope that it's going to get better or it'll all be okay, you're going to look like a Pollyanna fool, is what she said to us. And I can tell you, we all sat up a little straighter, all sat up and paid a little more attention to what this Catholic nun had to tell us the rest of the semester, because I have carried that with me every day. I will never tell any of you that it will all be okay and it will get better, because how do I know? The possibility is that sometimes it won't, just as much as the possibility is that it will. I don't know the answer, and neither do you. And so our work as a people of possibility is, even in those challenging and negative outcome moments, to notice that even there are other possibilities. They may not be our favorite ones, but there are still possibilities. Not perhaps the ones that we would have chosen, but possibilities nonetheless. And we will need to find a way, if not to embrace those new possibilities, to at least simply make the best of them. Soon, these new theme months that we're exploring with you are going to become small group conversations about the theme, starting in the new year. And so as I was preparing for this Sunday, I was looking at some of the small group conversation questions that have been asked around possibility in other congregations that have explored this theme. And I found one question in particular that sort of grabbed me by the scruff of the neck this week and shook me a bit. And it was this: are you willing to consider the possibility that you are not who you think you are? What? Say again? Are you willing to consider the possibility that you are not who you think you are? I suppose this means that possibility can be an identity question. Is it possible that I am not as free of judgment as I like to think? Is it possible that fear plays a larger role in my life than I admit? Is it possible that I have been more loving and generous than I ever imagined I could be? All of those things are possible. And then this week, the Jewish High Holy Days rolled around, and I thought about possibility in light of atonement and forgiveness and beginning again and love, and Rosh Hashanah, which is the new year in Judaism, when they picture each of us having our names written and sealed into the book of life for another year. There's something beautiful to me in that image, like the Holy is sitting up there saying, okay, Lynn Good, you get another year. Here it is. So you better make the most of it. And if you want to start fresh, you better say sorry for all that stuff you did wrong. And then, perhaps hardest of all, you better forgive yourself, because you cannot move forward into new possibilities if you are holding on to yesterday's baggage. Did you hear that? You cannot move forward into new possibilities if you are holding on to yesterday's Amen! Okay. If I am going to be written and sealed into the book of life for another year, I will have to think about what could be different. What could be different if I make amends where I need to, What could be different if I see myself and my shortcomings a little more clearly? What could be different if I see myself with a little more compassion? And what could be different if I am willing, more willing, to be moved and changed by what this year brings my way? I was watching a TED Talk just the other day. I know you're surprised to hear this. And I was watching one by a composer, a classical music composer, conductor. That's why I did this. That's not composing. That's what Nick does sometimes. Conducting, a man by the name of Benjamin Zander. And he was giving a TED Talk that was supposedly about why we should all love classical music. And I thought, I'm game. Why should we all love classical music? I'm going to watch this. But what was fascinating is it was about why we should all love classical music, but it was about possibility as well. Because Benjamin Zander said he came to realize, as the conductor, an important thing for him to realize was that he makes absolutely none of the sound that comes out of his orchestra. Right? I mean, he might groan and grunt while he's conducting. I know probably a few of them do, but he makes none of the sound. He relies on the orchestra that he is conducting to give life to the music. And he realized that actually conducting is an exercise in stirring up possibility in others. So that each and every viola player and violinist and bassoonist and are all sort of being stirred to life and possibility by his motions. And he said, you know, when I'm up there conducting, I know if what I'm doing is working by looking in the musician's eyes. If I look in their eyes and their eyes are shining, then I know that they're not only engaged or moved or inspired by the music that they are creating, but I know that they're in touch with a sense of possibility. Now, Zander didn't say this, but I could imagine the musicians sitting there feeling a sense of, look at what we can create together. Just hear what happens when the work and effort and talent of each of us works literally in concert. I could imagine each and every one of those players in the orchestra thinking, I am part of something great and much greater than just me. I, says the oboist, have something to contribute to this lovely whole. His role, said Benjamin Zander toward the end of his talk in a very moving way, is to reflect on the part that he plays in stirring up possibility. He said, who am I being that eyes are shining? Or conversely, who am I being that they are not? He movingly talked about parenthood in that same way. Who am I being that my child's eyes are shining? And who am I being that they are not? But you could take that out into any realm of possibility in your life. Who am I being that new possibilities are emerging in my world and in my life? Or who am I being that they are not? Friends, possibility is everywhere. There is the possibility of the blank page, the possibility of the silence into which the music breaks, the possibility of the path in front of you through the woods on which you are about to take your first step. Anything can happen. Even something that has never happened before. even the thing that you feared or wished for. Possibility abounds. And really, the truth is, it always does. What will happen this time? Who will I be? Who will we be? Are my eyes shining? Are yours? May we be people of possibility, open to what might be, open to seeing just beyond the horizon to what isn't there yet. May we be practicers and practitioners of possibility. So may it be, and amen.